Like we have a lot of our followers that ask, "Hey John, does this work on my pets?" And so that's why I really wanted to get you on because I have been using cannabis on our pets for years. You know, we asked our vet and he said, "Yeah, go for it," you know, and I can share some of those stories.
Welcome to Be Informed, Be Well with John Malanka.
Well, good to see you, Doc.
Nice to see you as well.
It's been a while. And so for everyone here, this is Dr. Gary Richter. He is a doctor of veterinary medicine here in this, actually practicing in the San Francisco Bay Area. And if anybody saw our interview with the Sacred Plant, he was highlighted and was very helpful. We did a whole segment on Dr. Richter and his practice, and has a beautiful practice here in the San Francisco Bay Area, which we'll get into as well. But let me just read your bio and then we'll get into the questions. You know, we have a lot of our followers that ask, "Hey, John, does this work on my pets?" And so that's why I really wanted to get you on because I have been using cannabis on our pets for years. You know, we asked our vet and he said, "Yeah, go for it," you know, and I can share some of those stories. But let me get back to you here. So Dr. Richter, and on top of not only being here in the San Francisco Bay Area, he's a conventional veterinary medicine training. He's certified in veterinary acupuncture as well as chiropractic, which I'm a big fan of for my body, as the owner of medical director of holistic veterinary care in Oakland, California. Dr. Richter understands the benefits of both conventional as well as holistic treatment methods for the preventative as well as therapeutic care of pets, which are family. Dr. Richter focuses on the integration of holistic and general practice veterinary medicine, regenerative medicine, as well as educating professionals and pet owners on the benefits of integrative care, which we'll get into, by integrating medical cannabis with other conventional and alternative therapies. Dr. Richter has been able to improve the quantity and quality of life of pets living with medical conditions ranging from arthritis to inflammatory bowel disease to cancer. Dr. Richter has written numerous articles for print as well as web publications on various topics, including strategies to integrate the use of medical cannabis into conventional medical treatments and therapies for pets. His book, The Ultimate Pet Health Guide, was released in 2017, and Dr. Richter is the past president of the American College of Veterinary Botanical Medicine, as well as the founding member of the Veterinary Cannabis Society. So congrats and good to see you again.
Thank you. It's great to see you as well.
You've done a lot. And I think you left out in that bio that you've been nominated Veterinary of the Year numerous times, haven't you?
That is true.
Is that like the People magazine sexiest man out there kind of up?
Yeah, maybe there's a tangential relationship there.
Anyway, good to have you on and thanks for all you do. And if anybody's in the San Francisco Bay Area or not and has a chance, he has a beautiful, you're still in the same office, right? That has that whole, I mean, it's really designed for pets and pets are family members, as I mentioned before. And I'll get into your books and everything else that you've done, but for my own personal health, my doctor is integrative as well as functional. And so I always get that question, "Hey, John, what is integrative? Are they real doctors? You know, what's their practice?" And they are. And so can you tell me what integrative means, not only in the human world, but also the pet world, and why you specialize in that?
Sure. So, you know, to me, integrative medicine means that I am practicing conventional Western medicine that we have all had experience with. And you know, there are a lot of really good things that conventional Western medicine can do. There's also some things that it can't do, which is where the other side of this coin comes in, which is pretty much anything that would not fall in the basket of conventional medicine. So acupuncture, chiropractic, herbal therapy, ozone, hyperbaric oxygen, what have you. I mean, the potential modalities are kind of endless. But integrative medicine is the practice of taking both sides, conventional and non-conventional medicine, and weaving them all together to get a better result than you could possibly get with one or the other alone.
You know, it's everything you mentioned, I do for my own health. Ozone, chiropractic, acupuncture, did you say cryotherapy as well?
It's not a modality that we're currently doing, but that absolutely is a legitimate modality.
You did mention one other thing I was doing.
Hyperbaric oxygen?
Hyperbaric, yeah. And so, and it's unfortunate that those aren't looked at as conventional. You know, the whole purpose of health and wellness and you being a medical professional is bringing bodies back to balance, if it's, of course, pets, but also with humans. And it's disappointing that these things aren't modalities that are covered by insurance, or even looked upon as something to bring, helping. You know, when Corinne went through this illness, and even in our health, in her healthy days, this is the type of practice that we use for our own personal health, and we found success. And so I love it that I think that's why I connected with you when I interviewed you. Yeah. Gosh, was that about 3 years ago when we did the show too? And so, with those treatments, can you share? You have a facility not only that has your typical vet that you would say, here, can I bring my dog or cat in here and other animals, but you have a whole training area in the back room, which I thought was great. Which is kind of hidden. You have a pool for rehab, and so you really take. I mean, pets are family members, and so I know we're in the San Francisco Bay Area, we're in California, so we're more open-minded to this. With this, do you ever get any hand slaps by the veterinary, is it the American Veterinary Association, like very similar to the AMA? Is this something that they frown upon? Because I know a lot of doctors I work with who are in the functional integrative world, are constantly having to answer questions to the higher-ups.
Sure. It's a great question. And I think your average veterinarian on the street, while most of them don't practice holistic or integrative care, most of them understand that there is some value there, even though they may not really fully understand the bigger picture. So I think your average veterinarian would sort of approach it in the sense of saying, like, this isn't something I know anything about, but there may be some value. There's always going to be, the establishment, if you will, that you push up against, and gosh, that's been particularly true on the cannabis side of things, because there is just so much misinformation and misunderstanding about what it is and isn't and what it does. So there's been a lot of pushback from the veterinary establishment in that regards. Although even that is now finally changing. I think for the most part, the AVMA and the Veterinary Medical Board and whatnot, they for the most part will let veterinarians do what they want to do as long as they're doing it responsibly. Fortunately, we're not quite as beholden to FDA approval like our colleagues in human medicine are.
Yeah. My aunt and uncle are chiropractors, and years ago they said, and I always wanted to go that route, and they said, I think she's going to become a vet. And I said, why? I said, most pets won't sue us.
Yeah. Right.
It's
a tough environment.
It is a tough environment. And, especially when a doctor of any level is trying to help you, meaning any specialty is trying to help you as a human or your pets. One thing, I've seen, it's funny, Corinne and I we had a cat that lived 29 lives, and she had, it's been so long, lymphoma. Mm-hmm. And our vet said, we can put her to sleep. And we said, may we try cannabis? And he said, yeah. And she was living in the litter box, eating in the litter box, using the litter box, sleeping in the litter box, never got up. And we started putting cannabis in her food. And next thing you know, she's moving. She's out. Now she's climbing up on the couch, going outside, coming back to our room and yelling at us like, I'm hungry. Feed me.
Right.
Well, she ended up living about 2.5 years later, 2 blood tests later, 0 cancer. I remember one Thanksgiving, which we're coming up to, I was in the kitchen preparing and my cousin goes, is that the same cat? I said, yeah. So she passed of old age. So I've seen that. And I've seen conventional. I had a dog years ago, a Rottweiler, that ended up having cancer. And our vet here in the Bay Area said, you know, we can put her to sleep, or we can try a round of chemo. And, you know, of course you don't want it. You know, I didn't know anything about cannabis, and this is early 2000. And we did a round of chemo, and I thought I'd be following her around with a diaper and picking up diarrhea because I kid you not, Gary, these golf ball size pearl necklaces she had were completely gone after one treatment, her energy level. So the doc said animals take better to stuff like this from conventional chemo radiation, as well as cannabis and other modalities, better than humans in a lot of cases. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think it's not so much that they respond better, but I think the goal of treatment is a little bit different. So, and what I mean by that is the goal of treatment with chemotherapy or radiation with a human is a cure.
Yeah.
And unfortunately what that means is that sometimes people will get poisoned within an inch of their life in the hope of a cure, which is why, you know, why there's so much misery associated with cancer therapy in humans. Clearly on the veterinary side, nobody, including veterinary oncologists, have any interest in putting a dog through that.
Yeah.
So our goal, you know, from an oncology standpoint, is rather than quantity of life, it's quality of life. So ultimately what that means is frequently the dosing of these chemotherapy drugs is a bit lighter. It's not going to be quite as aggressive. Yeah. The goal, you know, such as, you know, as in a case of your dog, is get the dog into remission for as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Keep them healthy and happy for as long as you can. And when that's no longer possible, then decisions have to be made.
And that's exactly what happened. She lived an extra 3 years. She ran. She was like a puppy again. It was amazing. People were like, what'd you give her? And I said,
yeah, right.
And she lived a great life. And then it came to the day that we did put her down. And that was a very sad day. But we saw, I said, I'll be damned. You know, I wish it would work like this when humans sometimes.
Sure.
As well. And so the topic of cannabis, you're talking about the what you call it?
AVMA. AVMA. American Veterinary Medical Association.
Excuse me. And I think everywhere, not only with medical school, veterinary medical school, pharmacist medical school or pharmacy school, the stigma is starting to come down where people are saying, okay, let's talk about this. I mean,
yeah.
I can't tell you how many of these conferences I see in veterinary that the topic of cannabis keeps on coming up. And it's funny because let's go two things. And I think you and I talked about this last time. Is it still illegal for a veterinary doctor to recommend cannabis?
Well, that's a very nuanced question.
Yeah.
So you know, the first fork in the road is when we say cannabis, there is legally speaking what is defined as hemp, and then there's legally speaking what's defined as marijuana. Now, we can talk all day long about the fact that there's no difference between those two plants, that it's purely an arbitrary line, but that aside, so as I think anybody who owns a pet knows, hemp-based CBD products for animals are everywhere. You can buy them in the pet store. You know, you can buy them anywhere. That said, depending on what state a veterinarian may live in, their veterinary medical board may or may not have something to say about it. So for example, in California, the veterinary medical board decided that they were going to go by the letter of the law. And the letter of the law technically does not allow for the sale of CBD for anyone, human or animal. It's just something that the FDA just kind of looks the other way for. But the veterinary medical board decided, since that was the case and that there was no law in California specifically making it legal, then it was thus illegal, and veterinarians were not then allowed to discuss, recommend, or dispense even a hemp-based product. Now that, as I'm sure you're very well aware, Gavin Newsom signed a bill about, I don't know, a month or two ago now, that explicitly made hemp products legal in California. And that bill very specifically mentioned products for pets. So we, and when I say we, I mean the my fellow members of the Veterinary Cannabis Society, were actually in the process of lobbying the Veterinary Medical Board to change their position statement. So now that it is legal in California, we would like the board to announce to veterinarians that they can recommend, dispense, et cetera. Now, the other side of it, the medical marijuana side, again, very, very variable depending on where you live. So obviously marijuana is federally illegal. Yeah. It is legal in many states. In fact, I think it's now legal in more states than it's not.
Totally.
And states have taken a varying approach. California has said no. Colorado and Oregon has basically said, you know what, we're not going to put a position out on this, but you're a veterinarian, go practice responsibly, have a nice day. So if you're a veterinarian in Colorado or Oregon, for example, you can talk to your clients and recommend medical marijuana and there's no problem at all. So it's super variable. This is part of why the Veterinary Cannabis Society was created, because of this lack of understanding and this lack of consistency that veterinarians in many cases really don't know whether they're coming or going.
I think a lot of doctors like that too. You know, I work with a lot of patients, but also patients that have patients, meaning their dogs, you know, their cats.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I said, oh, how great. Have you had this conversation with your vet? And they said, yeah, but he or she is not on board because of laws. They don't know where the gray area is or not. Like, as right. you're mentioning. But here's the thing that blows my mind. They have pet insurance and they showed me the reimbursement of, and it says yeah. cannabis.
Yeah.
Not hemp.
Yeah.
Not pet medicine, but cannabis on there, and they're reimbursed. So the pet insurance companies are reimbursing the parents, so the pet.
Yes.
But the vet's hands are being slapped. Nope, you can't do this.
No, it's a great, well, and to be clear, the only reason why that is the case is because the Veterinary Medical Board holds authority over me. If I'm not a veterinarian, and I'm telling people, you know, or, you know, so for example, the bud tender in the dispensary, all too often they're giving out medical advice to pet owners, which totally. Clearly is not a good thing. But the Veterinary Medical Board holds no sway over that guy because he's not licensed.
Yeah.
It's not a legal thing as much as it is a regulatory thing. Like, it's not like they can put me in jail, but they can suspend my license,
yeah.
which is my livelihood.
Yeah.
And the problem from a veterinary perspective, which is so unfortunate, is because the environment has been set up that is so untenable for veterinarians, most of them have decided that they're not going to go through the trouble to educate themselves about something that they can't talk about anyway. So that way, when people come in, they're just like, I don't know, you know, yeah. I can't talk about it. I don't know anything about it. And, you know, what's going to wind up happening is one day the switch is going to turn. And we're going to be able to talk about it. And a whole bunch of veterinarians are going to get caught with their pants down because they don't know what to say.
Well, you have that with even MDs.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't know what to do or say. It's not a one size fits all. That's a frustrating thing when I, you know, have a lot of patients come back. Well, my doctor recommended this. I went down there and I had these 6, 8, 10 products that the gentleman, he or she that, you know, sold me on. God, I was going to ask you a question. Oh, is there a difference in a pet CBD versus a human CBD besides a bacon flavor, which I'm seeing a lot of these companies? Because, you know, there are patients I talk to all the time. They said, I just give my pet the same thing I do, but one drop compared to me doing a full dropper. And they send me videos, you know, and they send me videos of their dog running and jumping in the pool. And they said, oh, my gosh. You know, and so is there a difference, or is it just marketing? Like a lot of stuff is marketing, and it's the same product, different label on it.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And, you know, I mean, as long as we're talking about a product that is purely a hemp extract and there's nothing else extraneous added to it, then no, there's no difference between the products. And I'll tell you that if you look at the research that's out now that has looked at the use of, say, CBD in dogs for arthritis, for seizures, the dosages that are being published are in the ballpark of about a milligram of CBD per pound twice a day. So if you have a 60-pound Labrador with arthritis, at least according to that research, you're supposed to be giving 60 milligrams of CBD twice a day. Now, you and I both know that that's a boatload of CBD, and that's an expensive dose of CBD. And you know, on the one hand, even though the research says that, it turns out that a lot of dogs will actually do well on significantly lower dosages. However, if you were sort of a mind or your dog needed a dose that high, it would be very, very difficult for you to find a pet product that's going to work. Because most of those pet products are maybe going to be somewhere between 5 and 15 milligrams per milliliter. So now all of a sudden you're talking about giving 4 milliliters to your dog twice a day, you're going to burn through a bottle in like 3 days. It's just not practical. So in those cases, it's often beneficial for people to look for a really high quality human product. You know, there's some out there that are, you know, as much as 60 milligrams per milliliter. Yeah. So then you can wind up giving the same amount of CBD, but you're giving a much smaller volume of liquid. It's more cost effective. It's more practical from the dog's perspective. So, the nut with cannabis, whether it's CBD, THC, or anything else, is the same thing as it is with any pharmaceutical. You have to know what you're giving and how much you're giving. And as long as you have that in mind, it's fine.
Yeah. You mentioned CBD, THC, and any other thing. I was going to ask you that question. Are you incorporating or have you heard of any other patients giving their patients, meaning the pets, different cannabinoids? You know, CBN, CBG, other things like that are helping humans for anxiety or sleep or inflammation.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there are pet specific products out there now that that are CBG heavy. There's one out there that I'm aware of that contains CBN. That's being sort of marketed for anxiety, sleep, that sort of thing. So yeah, and couple that with, you know, with terpene profiles. You know, if you know what to do with terpenes, you can really enhance the efficacy of your cannabinoids.
Yeah.
So that's the cool thing about cannabis as a medicine is it's not a one-dimensional thing. It's not like when I grab that bottle of amoxicillin off my pharmacy shelf, there's only one active compound in that. Cannabis is hundreds of compounds. And if you know how to blend them properly, you can do all kinds of amazing things.
Yeah. You know, you made a good point about blending. Can you throw, the one thing I always share with everyone is cannabis is not a one size fits all. Unfortunately, it doesn't work for everyone. And more is not always better. And so what happens when you hear these stories? I mean, I remember in high school, you'd hear this like, oh, dude, my dog ate my gummy bear. And now he's stoned in the corner in there peeing, you know, and shaking. And I know you must receive these patients that come in and come into your office. And can you share some of those stories and warnings and what they can do to help, because you hear these all the time that my dog unfortunately got a hold of my stash, if you want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's something that we have seen become more and more prevalent the more, you know, recreational cannabis is a thing. You know, 9 times out of 10, more than 9 times out of 10, when a dog gets intoxicated from THC, it's because they ate the owner's edibles. They ate the cookie, they ate the brownie, whatever it may be. I mean, occasionally a dog will eat a bag of flour, but not often. Usually it's the edibles that they've eaten. Interesting fact is that, and you know, not to get into too much specific detail, But dogs have a much higher concentration of CB1 receptors in their brainstem. And what that means is that dogs are actually more susceptible to THC intoxication than our people. And all of those signs that you were describing are signs of THC intoxication, lack of coordination, you know, urinating, sort of cognitively being out of it. You know, anytime you see anything like that, it is something that you want to take that dog to a veterinarian for. You know, if I'm being honest, fatalities from THC ingestion in dogs are exceedingly rare. It's not something that happens very often, but a lot of times they really could use some supportive care. I mean, if the dog is so intoxicated that they can't eat or they can't drink, they're going to need fluids. They're going to need some support so they don't get dehydrated. The only dog that I have ever personally seen die from THC intoxication was a dog that ate a bunch of edibles. The owner waited 24 hours before bringing them in. And what happened was, is that dog was so out of it that he had was basically unconscious, and he vomited and aspirated the vomit into his lungs. Yeah. And he wound up dying from that. So it is possible for an animal to die from THC intoxication. Again, it's rare, but nonetheless, even if it's not fatal, you know, I mean, anybody who has ever made the mistake of eating one too many edibles knows that that is not really a good time.
No.
And you know what? Don't make your dog suffer through that, both from the standpoint of like, put your stuff somewhere where the dog's not going to get at it. But if they do, take them in and get them treated. So at least, you know, they're not getting dehydrated and feeling even more miserable.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll add to that is no veterinarian gives a damn about the details of how it happened. Nobody's getting in trouble.
Thank you.
Nobody's calling the cops. Nobody's getting in trouble. Maybe if it's a kid, they're in trouble with their parents. But outside of that, nobody cares. We just want the dog to get better.
The animal. You work with cats too.
Of course. Yeah. Although I say dogs because
cats are
usually smart enough not to eat this stuff. It's really rare that you would see a cat voluntarily eat.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really have a taste for sweets. So they're not going to eat the brownie.
Well, we've used it on our cat with success and our dog for success as well. And so it's nice to see that. Can you share some of your success stories and what you've seen? Our cat, of course, had cancer. Mm-hmm. Our dogs, it was more of anxiety as they got older.
Sure.
And so, you know, we'd give them something, nothing that you can see a difference of their mood, but you just saw that it was balanced. As well as, and can you talk about the type of ingestion, the modalities, but also you being an acupuncturist, chiropractic as well. I'm a big fan of pressure points and massage, in which I have massaged our dogs as well, which just with a topical, and they have found, you know, calming feelings. So can you share some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. Stories? So, you know, obviously earlier we had that whole discussion about integrative medicine. You know, it is a very rare case that I would have a patient that's on cannabis and nothing else, because usually it's going to be, you know, depending on what's wrong with them, they may be on other herbs, they may be getting Western meds, acupuncture, what have you. So having said that, you know, I've had a lot of patients over the years on that are on cannabis. You know, cancer is a big reason. You know, it's I find value in that both from a palliative sense in it, from the perspective of it helps alleviate pain. It can help support their appetite, just generally help them feel better. But I will also say that a lot of these patients go way longer than they were expected to. You know, I mean, for anybody who's ever been to an oncologist, whether it's human or veterinary, oncologists speak in statistics. That's their language. They say, well, for this diagnosis, the average survival time is 6 to 12 months or whatever it may be. So, I mean, anybody that goes to the oncologist is going to get that sort of time window. It is very, very common for us to have these patients go far beyond the longer end of the oncologist estimation. And switching gears a little bit, arthritis or other forms of pain, cannabis can be great for that. Yeah. Since generally speaking with arthritis, you're talking about older dogs, just like older people, there's rarely just one thing wrong. So, you know, you put a dog, an old arthritic dog on cannabis, and they're not only does their pain go away, but a lot of times they're sort of cognitively and emotionally a little bit more settled. They're less anxious. They're more likely to want to get up and exercise and do things. And just like with old people, staying active and staying engaged is the key to staying alive. And the second you have a dog or a person that functionally gives up and says, I'm just going to lay here, it's the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
So anything that you can do in that regards is a plus. Certainly cannabis is on that list. The other nice thing about cannabis, as well as many other sort of natural therapies, is there are dogs out there that cannot tolerate the pharmaceuticals, whether it's because it causes GI upset or there's a liver problem or a kidney problem. It may be that you can't put them on the pharmaceuticals that in a perfect world you might like to. And cannabis becomes a really, really viable option. And again, that could mean a hemp-based CBD product. It could mean a higher THC product. It's just a function of appropriate dosing.
So on appropriate dose, are you finding more success? Because I see there's so many products out there, just like there is in the human market coming into the pet market now, that they have biscuits, gummies, tinctures. What are you seeing in your practice that you have seen success? Because a lot of dogs have arthritis, and I want to follow that up with, if nothing's wrong with your dog, can you start taking these as health and wellness for like you and I taking vitamins and supplements?
Sure, sure. So as far as like product formats go, to me, if you're going to look at cannabis as medicine, I feel like from a dog's perspective, the most viable way to do that is with a liquid. So usually a liquid is an extract that's in some carrier oil, whether it's coconut, MCT oil, fish oil, whatever it may be. I think if you're giving like treats, you wind up with that same issue we were talking about before, is that it's very frequently difficult to get to a therapeutic dose unless you're going to give them like 10 treats a day, which again, A, they're going to gain weight, and B, it's just not financially practical. So I think liquids are probably the way to go if we're talking about medical use. Topicals, there is a place for topicals.
Sorry, with the liquid, people always say, well, I can't put the dropper. I said, put it in this applesauce, put it in this, he or she's in the pet's food.
Or put it in their food. And that comes back to the discussion we were having earlier about if you get a product that is concentrated enough, you may only have to give several drops. So then it becomes a real easy thing. I mean, sometimes with cats, I'll tell them, just put the drop on your finger and just rub it on their gums and you're done. Good. You don't have to like wrench open their mouth and get something in there, which they're going to hate you for. Yep. And then, you know, from a topical perspective, you know, there absolutely are cannabinoid receptors in the skin and the hair follicles. We know this. I have used topicals on myself, and there is absolutely no question that they work for pain. The tricky bit with dogs and cats, number one, obviously fur. So sometimes getting skin contact can be a little bit of a challenge. And the other thing is classically, if you put anything topical on a dog or a cat, the first thing they're going to try and do is lick it off, which is not necessarily the end of the world if you're talking about a CBD product. But if you're talking about something that has a significant amount of THC in it, you got to be careful, because that is potentially a route to problems.
Same for humans, right?
Yeah. You know, try not to lick off that Rick Simpson oil you just put on your skin.
Yeah.
Probably not your best plan. You asked me another question.
Yes, about health and wellness, you know, preventative.
That's a great question. And I think that question is really a question about endocannabinoid tone and balance. And I think the reality is we don't know. because we don't have any kind of objective way to measure a patient's endocannabinoid tone. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, could they benefit from, say, more anandamide or 2-AG? And can we make that happen, you know, by giving CBD or THC or something? I mean, until we can actually figure out how those scales balance, I don't know that we're actually going to know whether or not that's a beneficial thing. I don't think that there's probably any harm done in giving low doses of, you know, particularly CBD. But there's certainly no hard evidence out there about if there's a benefit.
Even though, like us humans, them being mammals with a vertebrae and having an endocannabinoid system, you're not seeing the benefits on that as well. I guess, I mean, you're dealing with more pets than I am.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very hard to say if we're talking about like what people might refer to as microdosing. So if we're talking about low doses, you know, when you're dealing with a nonverbal patient, often the subtleties are lost.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if that dog, you know, maybe feels slightly better than they did yesterday. It's kind of hard to tell. So unless there's some sort of dramatic effect, it's tricky.
Gotcha. Well, I know you have another call here, but I have a couple questions coming up to follow here. Where do you see the future of this plant-based medicine being incorporated in veterinary medicine?
Cannabis-wise?
Cannabis-wise, yeah.
Cannabis-wise, yeah. I think the future is, number one, ultimately, this will all be federally legal. I think the horse is out of the barn. It's just a matter of time until there's the political will to make it happen. And the second that happens, you're going to wind up with a whole bunch of pharmaceutical companies getting in the game. And then you're going to have FDA approved cannabis products, much like currently we have Epidiolex, but yeah. Now you're going to have like a whole host of them. And you know what, ultimately that's good news, bad news. You know, the fact that pharma is going to dump billions into research is great. The fact that they may lose sight of the entourage effect and the benefits of whole plant medicine is probably an unavoidable consequence. But we'll have that information so that we'll probably be able to do a better job with our whole plant medicines because we'll know more about appropriate dosing.
You mentioned the horse out of the bag, and I have a dear friend that she's a doctor. She also not a vet, but a doctor, and she has an equine therapy ranch in Northern California. And she specializes in children that have trauma.
Okay.
And so one of her, I mean, he's runs the play, started having head shakes, and they thought, and the vet said, you may want to put her down. And he's like, and I said, you may want to try cannabis. And so she did all the calculations that you were talking, pound dosage.
Yeah.
And this horse could run with no reins, having the kid either pull on it, trot with it, walk with it slow, run. And this horse is always there. And so they thought, oh my gosh, we're going to have to pull this horse out of being a major help for these children. Anyway, instant. I want to say instant, like in two treatments, the shaking stopped, the horse is back to normal. And so, you know, I've seen this plant work on humans, not all the time, but I've seen it work on animals, not all the time. And so, you know, give it a try and ask. Ask your vet. Dr. Richter is reachable. He's approachable. And I know you being highlighted on national TV shows that people are coming to you from across the country as well. Is that correct?
It is, although it's worth saying that legally speaking, I cannot provide medical guidance for an animal I have not physically examined.
Gotcha. What I'm talking about. Okay.
So there, you know, there's that aspect of things, but certainly if people want to learn more about cannabis in general for animals, I would absolutely direct them towards the Veterinary Cannabis Society, which is vcs.pet. So yep. Super easy.
And I'll put that, and you also have some books. So I'm going to read these off. These are books Dr. Richter has written, I guess a book, excuse me, The Ultimate Pet Health Guide, and that's available on Amazon. The yep. Ultimate Pet Health Guide, longevityforpets.com, holisticvetcare.com, and also the ultimatepetnutrition.com. And that's for food, correct?
Ultimate Pet Nutrition is food and supplements, yeah.
Supplements, and but non-cannabis.
Non-cannabis.
Non-cannabis. Right. And then the Veterinary Cannabis Society, which is vcs.pet, not com, but pet, is Dr. Richter's website, which he is a founding member of as well. And but I'll put all those up on the site as well. Do you have any closing? First off, thank you very much for coming on again and being available just on a phone call. Hey, would you do this? Yeah, I'd love to do it. So thank you for being open. The question, I get a lot of questions about this, and who better to ask it is you. Do you have any closing words for our pet owners?
You know what? I guess I would wrap things up with saying that, you know, the single best thing that you can do for your pet is to be proactive with their healthcare. You know, and find a veterinarian whose medical philosophy matches with your own. You know, and be proactive. So, you know, I mean, don't wait till things are, you know, the wheels are falling off to do something. Pets are family, and in many ways, they give us more love than we will ever get from a human. So, we need to honor them for that.
So don't wait till it's too late. And the same thing with everyone's health. Don't wait till it's too late, you know, and I always share, and this is a great point you brought up, for humans, ask the question about cannabis. It's not illegal to ask the question. I don't know if it's the same in veterinary, but don't be afraid. And if they don't know it, in human with doctors, ask them if they can refer you. And the same thing with veterinary medicine. If your doctor does not know anything about cannabis, incorporating cannabis, or is not on board, ask them, he or she, if they can recommend another vet that is well-versed and open-minded. And if not, you have Dr. Gary Richter here. And so, Dr. Gary, I appreciate being open and coming back on the show. And thank you for everything you do. And wishing you a blessed day. And to all you pet owners, wishing you all a healthy and happy pet day as well. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. John Malanko with United Patient Group. Be informed and be well. And we'll see you soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Be Informed, Be Well with John Malanko. Be Informed, Be Well is brought to you by United Patients Group. Come and visit us at unitedpatientsgroup.com. And thanks for listening.